Midlands today with Tullamore Motors Renault. The Renault Clio is irresistible. Your 231 model is available for order today at tullamoremotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. How's your day going so far? First of all, a huge thank you to the fire service in Westmeath who are dealing with a fire in Mullingar and have been for several hours. It's on mornings like this we really appreciate what you do, and hopefully all are safe. And we'll have an update on that, by the way, in the news at 10. Coming up today, the Westmeath company opening up a new factory in Mexico, of all places. A man who sent his partner over 300 threatening and abusive messages in just 2 weeks appears in court, and you'll find out what happened after 10. And thankfully my voice is a little better today. Thanks for bearing with me. Health matters, rather fittingly. Liam Butler will be here from 10:30 to deal with all the seasonal ailments and indeed anything else you wish to pick his brain about. Plus, we reveal more details about Electric Picnic 2023. When you call 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text or you can WhatsApp if it's easier. Certainly cheaper. 083 30 10 103. Powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Let's take a look at what's happening around the region and around the world. The Irish Independent tells us how the Irish population is growing at 3 times the rate of home supply. That's a major challenge for policymakers. And it's little wonder, then, that rents continue to climb. In fact, average rents are up 85% in just 12 years. House prices are up 55% and have never been more expensive. So when you crunch the numbers, the paper says we need we built 120,000 new houses at a time when the population climbed by 360,000. So 3 times the rate of population growth compared to house building. Similar story then on the Irish Times. House prices set to rise despite slowdown in market. Now, it depends what side of the fence you're on. If you already own your own home, this is good news. Your asset is becoming more valuable, particularly if in the future you wish to downsize. If you've got kids in the house now and someday you look forward to maybe having an apartment, scaling down, having a bit of money in the bank, all great. But if you're looking to your kids and their prospects of buying a home, suddenly it's a totally different picture. So the Banking and Payments Federation predicts that inflation in recent months has contributed to building costs going up, and despite the economic downturn, there is still enough money in the system for people to afford asking prices as they are, and unless there's a significant increase in supply, they predict house price growth in 2023. So much the same trend as the last decade. -7 degrees, killer chiller. That's on the Irish Daily Mirror. So from tomorrow, temperatures across the country are going to plunge. And the coldest parts, naturally enough, here in the middle, -7 degrees is predicted. And the Arctic air mass will be with us until at least Monday, says Met Aaron. So therefore, if you're getting up early, if you're on that morning commute, expect some hazardous conditions and let the county councils beware and be active. And again, thanks in advance to all of the people who get out early and treat the roads and make sure they're as safe as possible. And just keep in mind as well any elderly people who might be in isolated areas over the next couple of days. If you have time, do check in on them. And unfortunately, given the price of home heating, it is going to be an expensive time, but do not do without if you can. You will catch your debt, D-E-B-T. That's on the Irish Daily Star today. Again, a reference to the weather. -7, big chill on the way. and the Irish Examiner. Good news and bad news type story. A little bit of research showing we drink more than we used to, but we smoke less. So, 1 in 10 people under 35, rather worryingly, have said they've tried to kill themselves. 10% saying they've attempted suicide at one time or another. Very sad. Very sad indeed. Now, again, good news, bad news. So, here's a more positive story from researchers at the University of Washington. Alzheimer's disease robs people of their memories and of their personalities and indeed families of their loved ones. And it can, unfortunately, be too late to treat by the time symptoms appear. However, a new blood test will show signs of these amyloids. They're basically proteins that attach to the brain and block the memories. And these proteins, these amyloids, will be in your blood system years before symptoms develop. And through this blood test, it'll be an early warning system, and it will allow you to avail of treatments years before Alzheimer's becomes a problem. Again, it's not going to cure. We're not quite at the point of cure, but we are at the point of treatment and early intervention. And so this blood test is in development. It was really just discovered by accident. And again, if you want to read more on this, it's in the Irish Examiner today. The GAA has a plan to deal with indiscipline, to stamp out all of these rows that erupt on the sidelines and can very often spill over into the crowd. And Congress is taking place in February, and two recommendations will be going before Congress, and effectively they will target team officials more so than any other group. Team officials, if they misbehave, there will be a whole raft of new sanctions introduced. And then for members who are caught carrying out the sort of behaviour we've seen in very unsavoury circumstances over the last few years, the maximum suspension is being increased from 96 weeks at present to 240 weeks. So effectively going from a 2-year ban to a 5-year ban. So those are some of the recommendations going before Congress, which, if passed, will come into effect next year. Now, a man has appeared in court, and he's unnamed to protect the identity of his partner. This happened in Dublin, but the reason I want to tell you about it is there are guys like this everywhere, and you may very well know somebody who is suffering at the hands of such a person. This man gained access to his ex-partner's email, and he found imagery of her with another man. And so he telephoned her at 1:30 in the morning, accusing her of all sorts of things, calling her all sorts of names. And he went on, over a 2-week period last year, to send her 300 WhatsApp messages and 34 text messages. This was on a daily, constant basis for 2 weeks. He did not take the hint. In the end, she took a prosecution against him. And he, you can debate this one now, he was handed down a sentence of 22 months, which was suspended on a number of conditions, including that he make himself available for supervision by the probation service. Some mitigating factors were that he has regained visiting rights to his children. He wishes to retain this on a more stable basis. He's going to behave himself, in other words. But the judge has ordered that he have no contact with his partner in any way for the next 2 years, and only with her express permission after that period. So while making arrangements for seeing the children, he has to go through a third party who has been approved by the court. So, moral of the story, there are protections in place, and there are groups that will help you seek out those protections. Excuse me. Starting to sound utterly wretched, haven't I? Yes. Kirstie Alley has died, star of many huge series such as Cheers and beloved movies of the 80s, Look Who's Talking. She was 71, never realised she was in her 70s. And unfortunately, she developed cancer not so long ago. It was a very short illness and she was taken very, very quickly. And in a statement on her Twitter account last night, her children said, "To all of our friends far and wide around the world, we are sad to inform you that our incredible, fierce and loving mother has passed away after a battle with cancer only recently discovered." And she was surrounded by her family at the time. Now, I think that's as far as the voice is going to carry me. If there's somebody who gives out to you for sending too many Christmas cards, well, you can tell them you're a happy person. Because a new study by the University of Limerick shows that sending Christmas cards is linked with lower levels of depression. And in fact, it can be a warning sign if somebody who traditionally sends lots of cards abruptly stops. So keep sending them. It's good for you. I don't know if the research has been paid for by On Post. I very much doubt it. 6th of December, less than 3 weeks to the big day. 25 to 10 on Midlands 103 on a cool and crisp morning across the region, no more so than in the rolling hills of northwest Meath, a setting as far removed from the tropical heat of Mexico as you can imagine. And yet, a local manufacturing group is looking to the Americas for its next phase of growth. Well, Quaylen Bushell is Vice President of Business Development with the Mergon Group, which is based in Castle Pollard. Quaylen, good morning.
Good morning.
So talk to us about, well, first of all, what Mergon does and where you see the future.
So what we do primarily is plastics moulding, and we use a number of processes, primarily a process called blow moulding and also injection moulding. And what we manufacture is air management systems for cars. So if you ripped off the dashboard of your vehicle, all of the ducting that goes on there that'll be keeping people nice and warm for driving home for Christmas, we manufacture those components for pretty much everybody in the automotive world. In addition to that, we manufacture what's called now the clear vision system, which used to be just the system that brings water up to your windscreen to clean the window, also very important at this time of the year. But with the new electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles coming out, that system now includes a lot of componentry to clean sensors and radars and LiDAR cameras as well. So that's our main business
okay.
in the automotive world.
I think I see where you're going with this, referencing the EVs, because one of the biggest selling brands, certainly in America, would be Tesla. And they have a huge manufacturing facility in Texas.
That's correct. We already have a manufacturing facility in South Carolina, and we've been working with Tesla for quite a long time, supplying them from South Carolina, but also, interestingly, from Ireland. And that business has continued to grow for us quite substantially. They've opened a new factory in Texas, as you mentioned, and we're supporting that primarily through the setup of the new site in Mexico. But we've been quite successful, over the last number of years since our involvement with Tesla in securing business with a number of other electric vehicle brands. Probably not as familiar to Irish road users, but will be in the coming years. Companies like Rivian, companies like Lucid, like Zoox, that have some really exciting new vehicles that have launched in the last 12 to 24 months and continuing to launch new models over the coming years. So that's where we see the real growth for the Mexican facility and in North America in general.
So how do you settle on Mexico? How do you find a site? Walk us through that whole process.
Yeah, it's a tricky enough process at the moment with COVID regulations and moving people around the world to select facilities. We had, initially wanted to investigate a second site in the United States, but it's a very tight labour market in the US at the moment. And we looked south of the border to Mexico. A lot of our customers were already there, people like BMW and Volkswagen. So we knew the lie of the land fairly well. And then really it was a case of we knew we had business that was going to be starting around the early 2023. And it was who could support us to put a plant up in quite a short space of time. And in fairness, the local government in Mexico, their equivalent of the IDA, have been fantastic. And the local developers there have really excelled in putting a very fine facility up in a short space of time. The other big thing that attracted us to Mexico was the availability of labour. And we've had quite a number of the Mexican management team and engineers staying in Northwest Mead in Mullingar for a prolonged period of time before the plant was even built to get to understand the culture of Murgon. I think the Mexican people culturally are very similar to the Irish people, and we've forged good friendships and camaraderie very quickly with the local team there. And we've had quite a number of our engineers then residing in Mexico for the last number of weeks as we set up the plant. So all of our robotics that we use for manufacturing these parts are actually designed and made in Westmead and then sent over. So it's been it's early days, but so far very positive vibes about setting up there.
And when you look at the global footprint, and bearing in mind the company has been in existence for over 40 years now, you have operations in the UK, South Carolina, Czech Republic, China, Mexico, we've just discussed, and of course Ireland, where it all started. Is Ireland still very much the headquarters?
Yes, it is. And that's really a great source of ongoing pride for the management of the company, is that we can work with all of these fantastic new companies that are developing cutting-edge technology in EVs. But all of that design and engineering work is conducted out of the Castle Pollard headquarters. And we see that continuing into the future. We made a very big investment in what we call the MI Centre, the Murgon Innovation Centre, a number of years ago. And that will continue to be the hub for development work for a lot of these companies into the future.
So 10 years from now, what do you expect the company to look like in terms of numbers? If you've got, I think your workforce is 1,100 at the moment.
Yeah, it's expanded very rapidly, particularly over the last couple of years, which I think is kind of unusual. But if a lot of these new electric vehicle companies, and you know, we're not just an automotive company, we have a lot of ongoing work in our industrial division with new sustainable technologies in areas like floating solar, vertical farming, data center cooling, and then our medical device business continues to grow as well. It's hard to put a number on it, but we would see a very bright future ahead for the company.
Well, wishing you all continued success, and as much as it's a source of pride to you to have the headquarters in Ireland, I think it's a huge source of local pride as well, and long may that continue. Quaylen Bushell, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Quaylen Bushell is Vice President of Business Development with Murgon. It is almost 9:45.
It's time to look your best in suits, casual, formal and footwear for men and boys at Guy Clothing High Street, Tullamore, the leading clothing destination for every man. Follow Guy Clothing Tullamore on social media.
Midlands 103.
If you recall last week, many listeners' hearts were broken listening to Deirdre's story. Deirdre lives in Birr with her husband. They both are being treated for cancer. He in Galway. She goes to Dublin. And the transport costs are just crippling for them. Now, help is available if you're Deirdre, if you're in a similar position to her. And you'll find out in just a few moments what supports are available. Coming up after the news at 10, why you do not have to put up with an abusive partner. An example of the courts at work. And Liz wants to say thank you to the researchers in Limerick who have proven that sending Christmas cards is good for you. It improves your mental health. In fact, when you stop doing it, it's one of the red flags for depression. Now, do you recall last week our conversation with Deirdre Furman? And if you didn't hear it, Deirdre lives in Birr along with her husband, and together they're being treated for cancer, but in different parts of the country. And she was describing all of the costs involved, from the wear and tear on the car, the fuel, the tolls, the parking, the meals when they are up in the hospital. And again, you're not talking lavish restaurant, you're talking whatever facilities are on site. And after that, we just had an avalanche of calls from other people who wanted to talk about the true cost of cancer. Now, if you missed Deirdre, here's just a section of what she said.
It's too much. Cancer is a very costly disease. It's hard enough to have that disease, but without the extra cost that comes with it. And it's not only us, it's every family out there. I mean, the car, you think of the cost to run the car all over the country for appointments. Then you're thrown in the replacement tires, services, which is probably every 4 to 6 weeks, because in 2 years, I've run up over 200,000 kilometres. Like, you talk about all that, taking it all into account. At least very, very, very little for living on. I know there is a lot worse out there than us. It's a huge, huge impact on people. And people don't realise the cost of being sick, let alone having cancer.
Now, you heard yesterday the Minister for Health wishing the best to both Deirdre and her husband, also talking about his own plan to try and support families in such a position. Now, Rachel Morrow is Director of Advocacy with the Irish Cancer Society. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
What advice could you offer Deirdre, her husband, and indeed people in that position as to how they can keep the costs down?
Well, Will, sadly, you'll know this from the calls and the texts that you got in, that Deirdre and John's story is sadly just two of all too many families, you know, feeling the financial misery that's caused by cancer. And Deirdre, you know, she was so courageous, she was so brave to talk about that, because what we find in the Irish Cancer Society is that there's actually a lot of stigma talking about kind of the finance side of this disease. But the reality is that everybody faces increased costs because of cancer, and for people who are working, they also have a drop in income, and that's a double whammy that families just simply aren't able to sustain. And you might know as well, Will, that you don't actually get a medical card automatically when you're diagnosed with cancer. And for anybody, any listener who's tried to apply for a medical card, there's so many forms, there's so much administration associated with it that some people simply give up. And it means that people are faced with these increased costs, like I said, they have a reduced income and they're not able to cope. So our nurses in the Cancer Society, we've actually taken almost as many calls about financial issues in the first 6 months of this year compared to the entire 12-month period in 2021.
Wow.
So we know that this is a huge issue, not just for, you know, the listeners today, but right across the country. There are families struggling to meet the cost of cancer. And I heard the minister yesterday, and he has taken steps to reduce the hospital charges, and we're really looking forward to that taking effect from April. But there are still so many costs associated with the disease, and what we want in the Cancer Society is for the government to take meaningful action, meaningful steps that will reduce the costs for people like Deirdre and John, who we heard about last week.
Well, I recall your team put together some research a few years ago suggesting it was up to €1,000 per month for somebody who has cancer in additional costs. And that's before we enter this huge period of inflation. So I shudder to think what the numbers would be now. Talk to us about some of the voluntary services that are available to support people.
Yeah, so the Irish Cancer Society has a number of services, and I was struck with, you know, Deirdre talking so eloquently about how the transport particularly was a real issue for her and John, because as you said in the intro, you know, they're traveling to different hospitals, but they're also great support to each other. That really struck me, that, you know, they travel together, they go to their appointments together, and I'm sure that's a source of comfort for them. But of course, in the background then is the cost of that transport. So we run what's called a volunteer driving service, and that is run entirely free of charge for anybody attending a chemotherapy appointment in designated hospitals. And we have over 1,200 drivers around Ireland, and they volunteer for us. So they use their own car. And I know, you know, COVID is obviously a concern for people who are immunocompromised at the moment. And this service actually continued throughout COVID because we were able to put measures in place which keep cancer patients safe. And it means that a cancer patient can sit in the back of the car with somebody if they wish. And they are collected from their house, from their door, and they're driven to the hospital. And when they're finished their appointment, they call the driver, and the driver will come and collect them and bring them home. And that means, like, not only that they have kind of the worry of parking, particularly, you know, if you're going into a town or a city, parking is a problem. They don't have the cost of parking. They don't have the cost of transport. And they're with somebody in an environment that they know is safe.
And if there are people listening who wish to volunteer, maybe somebody who's retired and has the time on their hands, what's the process? And indeed, again, mindful of the climate we're in, what's the amount? Is there a way to recover some of the costs at least?
Yeah, so the Irish Cancer Society will reimburse the driver for, you know, any expenses that they incur. And anybody who wants to volunteer, we're very grateful. I'm sure there are listeners this morning who do volunteer for us. They can contact us on 1-800-200-700 if they wish to express an interest in volunteering. And there's also another programme that we administer on behalf of the National Cancer Control Programme. So that's funded by the HSE. And that's an assistant fund that's made available to patients travelling to designated cancer centres or the Children's Hospital, and that's administered by us. And that enables kind of nationwide transportation assistance to people who have financial difficulty in meeting some of the cost of travelling to their appointments. And I'd also just mention as well, like, I'm conscious that many listeners who are experiencing these costs, or maybe a family member experiencing costs, the Irish Cancer Society also provides free counselling. And I think that, you know, coming into Christmas, finances probably are an additional worry for people. And again, you can dial 1-800-200-700 and speak to a cancer nurse, and she or he can refer anybody into counselling if that's something that they want to explore. Because I think that, you know, while we haven't seen maybe enough action from government on the issues of finances, it means that people are struggling with the anxiety and the worry that goes with financial worry. So we'd encourage people to reach out and maybe get some counselling support from us.
Rachel, very helpful advice. Hope it brings some comfort to people listening. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Will.
Rachel Morrow from the Irish Cancer Society. Still on the menu today, the first 10 acts for Electric Picnic 2023 have been revealed. Also, have you had a bad experience at Dublin Airport? Because one woman feels so strongly about this, she wants to share her story. And you can tell me if you identify with it. Better Health from 10:30. Definitely the seasonal bugs are in circulation. So Liam Butler from Haven Pharmacy will be here with some advice. And indeed, if you have a question, now is the time to send it on 083 30 10 103, text or WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Spotted this story in the Irish Independent this morning, and I thought it could be quite empowering for anybody who has been the victim of an abusive partner, a very possessive person. And the case played out before the Dublin Circuit Criminal Court. Everybody's identity has been protected and anonymised. The man was accused of sending a slew of text messages to his ex over a two-week period. 34 text messages, 300 WhatsApp messages in January of last year. And this was after he had spied through their son's tablet images of her with another man. And that seemed to send him into a rage. because he was calling her all sorts of names that are unrepeatable on the radio at 10 past 10 on a Tuesday morning. The court found in favour of the woman. The judge handed down a sentence of 22 months. Now, it was suspended on a number of conditions, but he was ordered not to have any communication with his ex in any way for 2 years, and then only with her express permission after that period. Deirdre Berry is at Esker House in Athlone. Deirdre, good morning.
Good morning, Will. Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
A pleasure, a pleasure. A case like this, unfortunately, is not unique. How often would you come across, maybe not the extreme nature of the contacts, but this sort of behaviour?
It would be fairly common, Will, in cases where there's coercive control, and I think that's a new term that we've sort of made the public aware of in the last number of years, and especially with security and cyber awareness, and how IT and, you know, technology is developing, a lot of them technologies are great for humanity, for security in normal days. But unfortunately, when it comes to domestic abuse and coercive control, those things can be manipulated to create more control around victims of domestic abuse. So it's unfortunate that it does happen.
So if somebody decides enough is enough, and they, let's say, approach a group like yours and they want assistance and they want to try and get the law to uphold their rights, what does that process look like?
Well, I suppose our service is bespoke to anybody that comes to seek support. So we'll sit with the woman and figure out what's happening for her. And if it's a thing that, you know, what we call cyber abuse or control is discussed, what we will do is we'll do like what's called a timeline and maybe a history of what's happening, so we can record everything to prepare it for the woman to go to her solicitor and to be presented in the court case. So the guards obviously can get involved at that point as well, and start to investigate the course of control. But I think, like, for a lot of women, it's very overwhelming. To be monitored at that level every day is quite stifling. So to come and speak to somebody, a support worker who is aware of the tactics, aware of the impact, can be quite empowering to hear, this is real, what I'm feeling is a real feeling due to the abuse that I'm experiencing. So, like, women don't have to, you know, make big decisions around the first or second time that they meet the support worker. And it's about talking that out and figuring out what's happening. And I suppose becoming aware that it is cyber abuse, and that it is a monitoring process that they're under, and that it's not something that they're just imagining, because it can be quite, you know, they can be quite confused and thinking, you know, somebody says to you that you're being recorded in your home, you tend not to believe it. Like, how could somebody do that? Like, it's not something that would happen normally. Or,
well, that,
you know,
actually, getting... that reflects what this woman said in her victim impact statement. She described being in total disbelief that this was happening to her.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be going on a long time before women become aware of it. You know, like, we have these doorbells now that are great for, you know, if you're in work, you can see packages being delivered, or, you know, you can see who's at your door before you open it. But sometimes then doorbells can be used to monitor women coming in or out of their home. You know, your phone, now you can have cameras on your house, you know, to see who's coming and going. But there's also can be cameras inside to monitor what women are doing, what children are doing. So that's the unfortunate part of these of technology developing, I suppose.
Now, when I mentioned this earlier, one of the comments I received was from a woman who said her first instinct on receiving an abusive message would be to delete it, to get rid of it and forget about it, rather than holding on to something that's toxic. But actually, that would probably destroy any evidence if you wanted to take a case later.
It can. And also in some of what we've come across as well, Willie, in some of the messaging apps like WhatsApp, if a number of messages are sent, the person that sends them can delete them at a later time. So if somebody is receiving, you know, abusive text message or a number of text messages, maybe take a screenshot so that preserves the evidence of what's been said, because it can be deleted at a later time.
Another...
And it is, to read through something like that again is traumatising, to read hurtful words and threatening words. But it is important to keep them, you know, as evidence to record the level of abuse or control that's happening.
And another feeling that came across quite strongly whenever we've discuss this, is the fear of escalation, that going to court potentially will blow things out of proportion or cause rifts in communities, you know, just this collateral damage that people may fear, even though they are the victim. And I suppose two questions. Does that often happen? And secondly, is there a point below court that can be explored?
The second question, there is a level where we can contact the guards, and the guards have often gone out and given a warning or spoken to the perpetrator. You know, you need to stop this, you need to calm down, you need to, you know, discontinue this behaviour, or it will lead to court. But I think in the long run, I think court probably is the best solution, because the law then, if it's a thing, like if the guards go and speak to a perpetrator and then he continues to do it, there's no order in place, or there's no law that has been broken as such. If it's a thing that there is an order in place and they've been told to stop, you know, cease contact, to stop, that's a legal process that's happened. And if the order is breached, the guards can then go out and arrest or charge the person for that. So, and in terms of the fallout, I think women that are, you know, they've always been told, don't tell anybody, nobody believe you, you know, and nobody's going to believe that this happened. So that's sort of their default. And is anybody actually going to believe that somebody has been monitoring me, or has been, you know, sending me these messages, or has been, you know, that I've been controlled for this amount of time? And the shame that's attached to that, where women are told they're not going to be believed in, is a huge thing. So it's very hard for women to come forward and name what's happening. And it's also hard to get support. But we haven't seen in the women that we've supported where the community has gone against somebody reaching out for help, or somebody, you know, taking the path to court for protection. It's not something that we have come across at all.
But of course the perpetrator would like to convince you of that in advance, that
of course
they will side against the victim and side in favour of the aggressor.
Yeah. And like going to court in normal times, like as growing up, we're told, like, if you get in trouble with the guards, you go to court. It's a massive fear for people, and being in a courtroom can be very intimidating. But I suppose the thing to say is that we have support workers that can help victims right through from the application of the court order to hearing it, to breaches, to giving statements to the guards. So there is a support system there that can help people right through that process. And I think the court, if people are using the court, it will become more stringent, and I suppose the repercussions for the perpetrators need to be more harsh, you know, to get that message through, you know, that this is unacceptable. I spoke at a primary school recently. They were just doing a collection for food, and I told them about the refuge in sort of child-friendly language, and asked them if they had any questions, and one boy put up his hand and said, I have a question. Why doesn't the government make a law that you know, people can't do this to women and children? And for a child, I just thought, wow, you know, if the world was that simple, that I said, well, there are laws. Why don't they work? Now, it opened a kind of world of questions, but for
imagine.
A child to, you know, like that's the response that we need. We need, you know, we need perpetrators to be held accountable, you know, and we need society to hold these perpetrators accountable.
Well, there are great groups like yours, like Laois Domestic Abuse Service, like Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service, and many others. And you're in the midst of 16 days of action along with Women's Aid and various others. So talk to us about how visible you will be in the wider Athlone area.
So we've had a couple of days where we've been in the University College in Athlone doing awareness workshops. We have a stand in Golden Island for one of the days. Last week we had a professionals meeting with the guards in the Rape Crisis Centre and the Students' Union, where we discussed strategies and how we might work together next year. So we haven't organised a big event, but we have a number of small events throughout the 16 days just to market. And the town bridge in Athlone will be turned orange this week for a couple of nights as well, just to for a visual in terms of the 16 days. But we're active throughout the year, and there's different parts, I suppose, throughout the year that we are going into Golden Island. We're doing, you know, awareness things within the community. So hopefully we'll be visible more, and people will get that information to them if they need it.
And for those who need help, and I'm always conscious these are real people and we're having a conversation about real life events. So how can you be contacted discreetly?
So we have our 24-hour helpline is 09064 741 22, and like I said, that's open day and night, every day of the year. And what I'd say to people is, if it feels wrong at all in any way, just to ring up when it's safe to talk and talk through that process, because people hear of big cases in the media that, you know, 200 text messages in so many minutes or that. And that might seem like, oh, you know, mine isn't as serious or I'm not going through that. But what I'd urge people to do is, if it feels wrong at all, to contact your local service and speak through it. The worst thing that can happen is for them to say, no, nothing's happening here, it's okay. And then the best thing that can happen is that you get support and get understanding for what you're going through.
Deirdre Berry, thank you as always for your time.
Thank you so much, Will.
Deirdre Berry from Esker House in Athlone.
Health Matters on Midlands Today with Haven Pharmacy Butlers in Birr. Expert knowledge for you and your family's health, built upon 90 years of experience serving the Birr community. Find Haven Pharmacy Butlers on Main Street in Birr and on social media. Expert care made personal. Midlands 103.
A lot of comment on the Irish Cancer Society and the supports they provide, and indeed many people wanting to volunteer their time to be volunteer drivers, and a few people asking whether the volunteer drivers only travel to local hospitals. No, they don't. They will receive expenses from the Cancer Society and they can bring you to appointments further afield. So contact the Irish Cancer Society for more details. And thanks to Keith as well. I got your message, Keith. Very sad to hear of your mum passing away at only 48 years of age with cancer. It is just a cruel disease and very indiscriminate in the people it takes. Now, let's move on to, well, a whole host of different queries, and obviously we're into winter and those seasonal bugs are in circulation. So Liam Butler is here. He's very, very busy, and his team at Haven Pharmacy Butlers in Birr. Good morning, Liam.
Good morning to you, Will, and Merry Christmas to you and your team and all your listeners.
And many, many happy returns. Let's start with somebody who is planning in advance and they have their Christmas party on Saturday. And, well, Christmas parties, we all know what happens the next day. The head is exploding and you want to hit the pillow. And, well, actually, that can linger. In this person's case, they say they feel rotten for the guts of a week afterwards. Now, let's not be killjoys and say, well, the answer is not to drink. What's a practical approach?
Yeah, look, we get asked this a lot, particularly this time of year, because everybody's going out on Christmas parties, or if there isn't an office party or a work do, they're just going out socialising a little bit more. You cannot say to people, just do not drink, drink Ballygown. There are lots of non-alcoholic alternatives out there, and people are moving and gravitating towards them. But two things I'd like to tell you, that particular questioner and your listeners this morning: you can get a couple of products with activated charcoal. And if they're taken just with the first drink, they do absorb some of the more toxic effects from alcohol. Now, I wouldn't encourage anybody to drink to excess, but certainly if you take activated charcoal with your first drink, it does reduce the impact of the hangover if you've got too many drinks the next day. The other thing I'd really like to do, and all your listeners know this, alcohol, you do become a little bit dehydrated. So if you can, pre-hydrate before you go out. So people are probably familiar with the brand Dioralyte. Now, unfortunately, it's not available in Ireland at the moment, but there are lots of other alternatives. And I'm looking at two in front of me now, one called ORS and one called Electrosal. So certainly here in our pharmacy last Saturday, we were out on our party night. I had a sachet of Electrosal about 6 o'clock in the evening. I had one again just about 8 o'clock before I headed out. And I had a couple of drinks, a little bit more than I normally would have, but I was fine the next morning. I really was fine. So pre-hydrating, I didn't use the activated charcoal, but that's another really good solution. It's very popular with younger people who are probably going to be having a little bit more than I would be when I go out.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we all come to a point where our metabolism doesn't function in the way it used to, and we can't take the hangovers as well as we could at 21 years of age. So sooner or later, they'll be reaching for the activated charcoal as well. Now, the next query we have, what do you recommend about setting goals for your individual health in the new year? That's a wide open one, isn't it? It depends on what your state of physical health might be. Some people want to run a marathon, whereas others would be content to climb the stairs.
Well, the first thing I'd say is that it is very important that everybody does have health goals. A lot of people are going to make goals around sport or work or family. But I think we often ignore our own individual person, and we do have to make health goals. And that could be something simple like, you know, losing a little bit of weight, going to bed a little bit earlier, drinking a little bit less. But certainly I would recommend, depending on your age, going for full health screening. We're starting to see a lot more people spending more and more money on their health. Will people are interested in living longer, but not only do they want to live longer, they want to be healthier towards the end of their life. And you cannot start that at age 70 or 75 or 80. You've got to start at 40 and 45, because lots of people will know particular diseases that maybe are in their family. And you've mentioned cancer earlier on, but there's lots of families that would have a heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all of those kind of things. And if they're tackled head on and you make particular or specific health goals, it really does play an important role in living longer and living healthier. And I'm struck by one little module I was doing recently on a pharmacy course, and it was about bowel disease. And if people go for bowel screening, this can be done, it can be done through your GP or directly with the HSC. If they can pick up a small little thing that is likely to develop over the next 5 to 10 years, your 5-year life, acceptance afterwards is nearly 10 times greater if you have it done quickly. So in other words, if I go in January and have bowel screening and I spot something small, it can be treated. If I don't go in 5 years' time, I'm less likely to live longer and have a lot more repercussions and problems. So the big thing for me is the ostrich sticking his head in the sand. And any fellas out there listening today, you're the ones I'm particularly talking to. Females generally are much, much better at tackling their health. I'd encourage people definitely to make health goals. They don't have to be, you know, big, long lists. But if we can all improve our health a couple of percent, we're going to live longer and live healthier. I mean, that's what we all want. But
yeah, and I agree with the value of goals, although I've never achieved the six pack much as I've tried, that having something 20, 30, 40 years hence is maybe a bit nebulous. We all want to live longer, but what should specific goals in the here and now look like to achieve that?
Well, if I talk about my own health, my blood pressure is starting to increase a little bit. I'm not on any medication for it, but I'm 54 now, and I can see my blood pressure increasing, you know, every year almost for the last 5-6 years. So there is going to come a time when I'm going to need blood pressure medication just to regulate that. If I wasn't having the screening, if I wasn't wearing the 24-hour machine once a year or getting it checked in the pharmacy, I wouldn't be aware of that. And high blood pressure, you know, if it's untreated, it can be very, very difficult to recognize it. You wouldn't be aware of the symptoms normally. It will just creep up and it will cause issues. So I'm very comfortable knowing that my blood pressure is increasing. I'd prefer if it wasn't, but it is. But I'm really comfortable around the fact that I know it's going up and I'm aware of it. And that when the time comes and my GP says, yeah, you need this medicine or two medicines, whatever it is, that I'll be able for it. Because I don't want to tackle this when I'm 70 and realize I've had high blood pressure for 15 years.
Well, there is that expression, what you can measure, you can manage and improve. So establishing a baseline now and then tracking it over time, that's very useful. Liam, stay there for a moment because we've lots of questions, and 083 3010 103 is the text or WhatsApp number for your query. He's here until 11 o'clock this morning. After which, more details on Electric Picnic 2023. 10 huge acts have been revealed, and one woman wants to share her rather disappointing experience of Dublin Airport. And tell me if you have had a similar incident to what Tanya will share in an hour's time.
Health Matters on Midlands 103 in association with Haven Pharmacy, Butler's Burr. For confidential pharmacy advice, let Liam Butler, third generation of the family, and his staff look after you and your family. Find Haven Pharmacy, Butler's Burr on social media. Expert care made personal. Midlands 103.
Linda would like to pick up on something you said earlier about blood pressure, Liam. She says, Hers tends to be slightly up or slightly down. It varies, and she has read that potassium can elevate blood pressure. So she's wondering if that's correct, and whether she should be taking supplements.
Yeah, I think with blood pressure, you know, we often take blood pressure measurements here in the pharmacy during the day where people feel a little bit unwell and they come in and we'll take it for them. And you get a reading there and then. Now, it is a snapshot in time only. I get a 24-hour machine on once a year. The cuff inflates every half an hour. So you get kind of 48-odd readings. No, none of my readings are ever the same. So blood pressure is very, very normal for it to go up and to go down. So when you hear a reading of, and I'm just going to say 120 over 85, nobody's blood pressure stays at 120 or stays at 85. It fluctuates madly during the day. And certainly within my own blood pressure readings, I can see a big difference between day and nighttime. So when I'm off work, obviously my blood pressure is a little bit lower because I'm not working as hard or not under the stress. So rather than recommend her to start on the potassium, I think it's important she'd have a chat with her pharmacist or doctor. She might need to have more regular readings just to see what it is like. The 24-hour machine is a fantastic idea to have, but I certainly wouldn't be recommending her to have potassium now to boost up her blood pressure if she didn't need it, if it wasn't proven to be needed. But she is right. Potassium will increase blood pressure slightly. But there's a lot more people out there who will, unfortunately, you've got high blood pressure who are trying to reduce it than there are people with low blood pressure who are trying to increase it.
Next query is from Anne, who asks if it's too late to get the flu vaccine.
Not at all, not at all. No, and sorry, the government and doctors and pharmacists are ready to give it any time now. I know we do a couple of clinics a week. The GPs here in Burr are doing it as well, and other pharmacies. So if you haven't had the flu vaccine, if you feel you are vulnerable or if you're compromised in any way, I would definitely recommend it. This past season in Australia and New Zealand, it's been quite a strong flu season. There's been lots of cases. And I suppose it makes sense, you know, that we would get that here too. It normally does transpire over over the last, I suppose, 2 years now or 2.5 years. People have been really good at social distancing and washing their hands and wearing face masks. And that's all gone now. And I'm delighted that's gone. And the paranoia around getting sick is gone. But it has led to an increase in common colds, and there's a lot more conditions getting transmitted from person to person because we're meeting more people. So if you're compromised in any way, or if you think your health is a little bit poor, it's definitely not too late. The flu season will be here until the end of February. Once you get inoculated, so if that lady got a vaccine today, she'd be at full, I suppose, protection in about 10 days. So 10 days, yeah, about 10 days. So it's definitely not too late. I would urge people to get it up until the new year if they need to.
Now, a few people are asking about strep A infections, which seem to be quite common at the moment. Are you getting many queries?
Yeah, there's a little bit of hysteria around it, Will. There have been 9 children, I think, to date in the UK have died from strep A infections. So it's normally a very, very simple little infection, but it can be quite serious if it starts to spread. So typically we would see it in sore throats. So most people who get a sore throat and get that kind of, you know, swollen tonsils and redness and even pus, that's a strep A infection. Or children who get scarlet fever or get the skin infection, impetigo, they're all strep A infections. But if the strep A infection moves from throat down into the lungs, it can cause pneumonia. Or if it gets into the bloodstream, it can cause sepsis. So typically strep A is quite a common, normal, very, very easy to treat condition. But if it does get worse, it tends to get worse rapidly and the patient deteriorates quickly, particularly children. So now the next question you're going to ask me, well, how do you know the difference between, you know, a minor, mild one and a more serious one? And I think that's really just down to obviously the parents know their children better than anybody else. Child that's very listless, it's very floppy, just not interested in doing anything. They're not eating and drinking, or they're not passing urine. Straight away, they would be alarm bells ringing for me, and people need to go to their GP or directly to A&E. Have I seen any? You asked me that. I definitely haven't, not the serious one, but we are seeing a lot more interest in it because it's on the mainstream media, and a lot of our, you know, channels, I suppose, on TV are coming from the UK. So there's a huge awareness of it now. I'm not trying to create any more hysteria, but if you have concerns about your child, it's typically children we will see it in, to be honest, chat to your local pharmacist or GP.
Mark is bothered by, it's not him, he's asking on behalf of a woman who's bothered by restless leg, especially at night. What causes it and what relieves it?
Yeah, it's actually poorly understood. It's a very, very difficult thing. I have huge sympathy for Mark's question. We would see this quite a lot, Will, in elderly people typically. Generally, it's down. I'm going to recommend a couple of things that he would try, and that would really tell you what's going on. Quinine is a very, very old-fashioned remedy, but it does play a part in this. So when people go to bed and their legs aren't moving, sometimes it can be down to a kind of a salt imbalance in the calf particularly. And if you've ever had a calf cramp, it's quite similar to that. The other thing that's very, very good, and it's easier to get rather than taking quinine tablets, is Schweppes, or one of those companies make quinine tonic water. So it's just regular tonic water that you have fortified with quinine. That can play a role. As I said, and this goes back to, you know, an earlier question around potassium, does it raise blood pressure? The salts like sodium, potassium, magnesium are really, really good at reducing the symptoms here. So I often recommend it's actually a non-medicinal intervention. It's just a banana a day. Banana is really rich in magnesium. And that's what I would recommend. If they don't like bananas, you can buy a magnesium supplement tablet. But a banana a day normally solves that problem.
All right. Next, Hilda in Shinrone wonders, why is the nasal spray option for flu vaccine for under 18s only?
If I'm my normal cynical pharmacist self, I would say it's just down to the cost. So the nasal spray is dearer to manufacture and it is dearer for the HSC to provide. So if you've got a choice, of providing an expensive option or a cheap option, the government have to provide the best cheap option there is available. When we're doing flu vaccines here, generally children up to about 13, 14 all want the nasal spray. When they start to get a little bit older, kind of 15, they're curious around the injection. A lot of them migrate towards it, you know, asthmatics and people like that need it. But I would say it's simply down to cost. Most flu vaccines are provided free of charge by the state, so there is no charge to the patient. And if the state are providing it free of charge, they want to get the best economic return, I suppose. So that's the honest answer for Hilda and Shinrone. The nasal spray is dearer.
Fair enough. She made the point that there are many 13-year-olds who are taller than she is. So it comes down to money, as many things do. Liam, a very happy Christmas if we're not talking to you again. Thank you very much for taking our call today.
And have a very healthy Christmas, Bert. Thanks very much.
Liam Butler from Haven Pharmacy Butlers in Burr. Now, still to come today, the recommendations going to GAA Congress to stamp out violent behaviour on the sidelines. I'll tell you what's proposed and you can tell me if you agree with it. Also, a complaint about Dublin Airport. Have a listen to what Tanya says at 11:45. Tell me if you've had a similar experience and how you would handle it if you were in her shoes. And in 15 minutes, all you can look forward to at Electric Picnic 2023 as the first 10 acts are revealed. Now, Chris Lynch Tool Hire was set up in the 1970s. They are a family-run business in Mullingar, and indeed they trade right across the country through their website, toolshop.ie, which has a notice today, coming into one of the busiest periods of Christmas, saying they are not accepting any orders due to a fire at the facility. And that fire was tended to by the fire service in County Westmeath, of which Pat Hunt is Senior Assistant Chief Fire Officer. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Talk us through what happened.
As you said in your introduction, yes, Chris Lynch's Tool Hire, the premises in Walterstown South, outside Mullingar, was a victim, or should I say, succumbed to a fire this morning. The brigade were called, Mullingar Brigade were called approximately 3:15 this morning to the fire, and subsequently called in Castle Pollard Fire Brigade to assist in containing the fire. Now, just to fill you in on the site itself, the Lynch family home is actually on the same site that the actual main retail building is as well. So the main job of work was to, first of all, bring the fire under control, but also as well prevent it spreading to the family home. And credit where credit is due to the responding crews, they did exactly that. They brought the fire under control and prevented the family home being substantially damaged. All I can tell you, Will, is that the fire has destroyed the main retail building that was on the site. The brigades are still on the scene at the moment, damping down, so you can appreciate the scale of the fire if you were called to it at 3:15 this morning and your crews are still there as we approach noon. Luckily enough for the Lynches, there's no element of sarcasm intended, but it was pure sympathy and compassion in the sense that they saved their family home. The vehicles that were on the site were saved as well, and that the damage is confined just to the retail space itself.
And it's only material damage, nobody was injured?
Thankfully, from both the Lynch family themselves and indeed from the responding crews, thankfully we have no reports of any injuries. But as I said just a moment ago, Will, the main body of the building that is on the site, the retail space itself, is substantially gutted. Again, all we can say is, you know, our hearts go out to the Lynch at this particular time. It is, as you said yourself in your introduction, a very, very busy time of the year for any retailer, and to lose the main retail space is just unfortunate and regrettable.
Okay, is there anything motorists need to know travelling that way today?
At the moment, no, Will. Our crews would be kind of finishing up there. Whatever smoke that would have arisen from the main body of the fire would have been kind of in the pre-dawn hours of the day. It's well under control at this stage. It'll just be smoke, small amounts of smoke and steam coming from the amount of water that has been thrown onto the fire or used in firefighting itself. There's no major cause for alarm. It's just a case of there will be, and this is what I always maintain, there will be people who will be kind of either heading out there and rubbernecking, which may in turn, as you know yourself, will cause an accident. So again, we would encourage people just to be safe and to be sensible and to leave the family to deal with this new reality at this point in time, and instead of rubbernecking, offer their sympathy and support to them at this time.
Mm. Pat, well said. Thank you very much for taking our call today.
Thank you, Will.
Pat Hunt is the Senior Assistant Chief Fire Officer in Westmeath, and indeed to all who work at CL Tool Hire, this is a huge shock, a huge blow, and it's going to take some time to get back on the feet. Margaret had asked earlier about Bovril, and we didn't get to put the question to Liam Butler at the time. However, her query was whether it is good to take, particularly if you are an elderly person, will it build up your resources? And the answer is not really. So Bovril was marketed, and you're back to the advertising standards of the 1800s, by the way. It's 150 years old, and it was said to have lots of health benefits, and much of that remained in popular folklore for years. But scientifically speaking, it was all inflated. No is the answer. It's a warming drink. It's a comforting drink. Yes, by all means, take it for those purposes. It will certainly beef up, because it's from beef extract. It'll be a nice complement to a meal. But no, if you're taking it because it's going to turn you into Popeye and you'll have lots of muscles and veritable muscles in your immune system, ain't going to tick that box, I'm afraid. Now, looking at Electric Picnic and the lineup that has been revealed, 10 artists including Tom O'Dell, Rick Astley, Niall Horan, who you heard a little earlier, the biggest bromance in show business at the moment, Lewis Capaldi and Mullingar's Niall Horan. And you saw them last year, or well, earlier this year, I should say, at the FLA, and you will see them together again next year for the FLA, and only a few weeks later they shall both be in Stradbally for Electric Picnic, because both Lewis and Niall are on the list of the first 10 acts to be revealed. Deirdre Crooks is with us. She is from LHP, which runs publicity for Electric Picnic. Deirdre, good morning.
Good morning, Will. When you said the biggest bromance there, I thought you were going to talk about me and you, because I've been on your show so much to talk about Electric Picnic.
Well, yeah, and for many, many years to come, hopefully as well, because it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm looking at the lineup, and maybe you'd take us through some of the names I haven't mentioned.
Well, we have Billie Eilish, Lewis Capaldi. They're our two of the headliners over the weekend. We're going to be announcing the third headliner next year. Fred again, Niall Horan, like you mentioned, he's gone down a storm online. Steve Lacy, Idols, Jamie XX, Tom O'Dell, Rick Astley, which I'm very, very excited about, and Amel and the Sniffers. So that's our first 10 acts, and the rest of the lineup we'll announce in the new year.
Now, you only tell us now. When would this have started, the whole process of feeling out different artists, seeing who's interested, deciding who you want to invite in the first place?
Oh, it would start by the time the last lights go down on the Sunday night at an Electric Picnic. They're already looking to book acts for the following year. There's months and months in advance before we'd announce a single act, because there's so much to consider. You have to consider like bands that are actually on tour. It has to fit in around what they've already got booked in and what they've got planned for the festival calendar. So it starts so many months in advance. It's crazy.
And is it a case that you have to go seeking them out, or given the scale and the reputation of EP, do they come to you?
Well, I'm not the booker, but I do know that the booker would have relationships with all the agents. And for something like Electric Picnic, I think it would be a kind of case of they'd all want to play Electric Picnic. I would hope so. I can't really speak for the booker. But for it's the biggest festival in Ireland with 70,000 people. So if you want to get your music out and be known in Ireland, that's the festival you want to play at.
Now, Billie Eilish, of course, has been there before, and huge crowds wanted to see her. I think it was in 2019. It was just before COVID. So are you going to have her on an even bigger platform next year?
She'll be on the main stage again. She's the headliner for Friday night. So I don't think you can get bigger than that. This year, because we increased the capacity, we changed the layout of the main arena to accommodate for larger numbers. So I'm sure she'll have an even bigger crowd in front of the stage for 2023.
Are you going to have Niall and Lewis on at the same night, given their friendship?
Do you know what? I actually don't know what night Niall is playing, but I would say if he's on the same day as Lewis, they'll definitely be on stage together. They absolutely love each other.
So that's what's on the main stage, and they're the big names. Any other changes you can tell us about in terms of layout and all the side attractions, or is that still under wraps?
Well, it'll be similar to what we saw this year in 2022, because we'd had the break. There had been lots and lots planned for 2020, and all of that got put on hold. We had the brand new theatre area this year, which was really, really popular. We had Ballet Ireland perform there, and we'd another dance, the thing called Rooster. We'd loads of different things that were happening, and there was a show every single day from Ballet Ireland. There was anything that was on in the theatre area, there was three shows a day. And that was really, really popular. Another area which has gone from strength to strength is the podcast stage. It was started off in Minefield as a smaller little tent a good 2 years ago, and now it's become so big. I mean, podcasts are selling out now on their own right. Individual podcasts in Ireland. We've got Vogue and Joanne McNally, you've got Dieran Garrahy, and that podcast stage has become a much bigger tent within the Minefield area. So both of those areas were really, really popular this year. And then Freetown has got bigger. It's amazing there. I don't know whether everybody has found their way to that area yet, but it's getting bigger every single year, and there's so many little hidden nooks and crannies. It's a lovely little area to go and chill out and to just catch different bands playing.
So if you haven't got a ticket, more will go on sale on Friday. And you say these are the last remaining tickets. Can you give us some sense of numbers? Will they sell out in 6 seconds flat?
I think it will sell out pretty quick, judging by previous years, whenever we put the last few tickets on sale. I have a feeling that they will go pretty quickly. So if you haven't got your ticket, now's the time to do it. Make sure you're online at 9 a.m. on Friday morning. I don't know how many are going on sale. I haven't been given that number. But just from previous years, I'd say they'll go pretty quickly. I'd say they'll be gone within an hour, but, you know, who knows?
We'll take a bet on it. Deirdre, thanks very much, as always, for your time.
No problem.
Deirdre from LHP. They do the PR for Electric Picnic. And by the way, tickets for 23 are priced at €281 for weekend camping. You can get day tickets for Sunday, €106. Early entry passes for the Thursday are priced at €39.05. Anyway, all of this is on the Electric Picnic website if you want to check it out. Around the Midlands, yeah, it's getting really cold and frosty, isn't it? It's only 4 degrees in Portlaoise. Now, provided it is passed at Congress in February, and there's no reason to think it won't be at this stage, a team official who engages in any type of physical interference with an opposing player or a team official at a juvenile game will see a suspension lift from a minimum of 2 matches to a minimum of 6 months. Now, David Hollywood, our sports editor, is with us. When it comes to physical interference, David, how did we get to a situation where a team official would only get 2 weeks for attacking somebody?
Yeah, when you lay it out like that, Will, it sounds farcical ultimately, doesn't it? But it's how things have transpired over a long period of time. And I think we're in an interesting zone where so much more of our lives are documented and publicised on social media and so on and so forth. And that interferes with our ability to understand with what frequency. So none of us can say, this is the thing, there is no answer to that. You can't determine whether or not there's a huge amount more violent behaviour or assaults, but it feels like that, definitely. And regardless of the truth of that answer, the reality is the GAA have to do something to address it, because from an outward-facing perspective, it is really negative.
Yeah, and more people can cast judgment in an era of camera phones and social sharing, whereas before an incident might have been confined to only the immediate couple of hundred people who were there, not all of whom were looking in that direction.
And they're stakeholders in GAA, so they're not going to undermine GAA after that. It contains itself in a way. And that's also part of Irish culture, I think, is to contain certain negative stories. Sure, look, we'll get past it, we'll move on from it. But as with the contagion of social media, things go viral, solutions need to be arrived at. And I think a key point here is, as you said, like, how do you get to a stage where you attack someone and you're not even on the pitch, as it were, you get 2 weeks. The other thing here is this applies specifically to juvenile games, and I am all for ramping up punishments for any violent behaviour at juvenile games. It is that should be a threshold we don't ever get close to crossing. And I'm sure many of our listeners this morning will have relatives or will be a family involved in GAA at a juvenile level. And I know from speaking to my relatives who are very much involved in it in different counties that the parents and the volunteers that do such great work in driving Gaelic games can also be totally and utterly overly emotionally invested. And that spills out and spills over, and it's just flat out wrong that it happens. So we need to find a redressing of the balance in that regard. Obviously,
not to mention that what happens there becomes a thin end of the wedge. It is tolerated further up the chain as everybody progresses.
Juvenile games. This is why it's so important. It's what people witness being tolerated. They then bring it up through the rest of the age grades, and ultimately then if you have a problem with the top product on television also perpetuating this, it's going to make it from top to bottom a very difficult sport to officiate. And the GAA have been struggling on officiating or dealing with sanctions around these issues. Some of the alleged assaults that took place, we've had Kevin Nocton in Roscommon, St Aidan's and St Dominic's had a game in Ballyforan back in August. I think that was one of the most high profile. Shortly after that, there was an incident in a Wexford Junior A football match. And most recently in November, really ugly scenes in Parnell Park. Ullart Dabala of Wexford and Nave Barogue of Dublin, a fight broke out onto the pitch and that spilled into the bench and ultimately into the stands. And that one went viral as crowd members really did get involved. Frightening scenes. I bring my daughter to GAA games and thankfully, she's never witnessed any issues, but it gives me pause for thought. When you witness something like that, you do not want to expose young people to
no.
that.
No. How do you explain it? How do you justify it? You can't. So, what's the headline recommendation?
So, the headline recommendation is to bring this, without getting too technical, to a category, from a category 3A infraction to a 4A infraction. Trust the GAA to be wonderfully bureaucratic in how they deliver this, but effectively going from a fortnight to around a 2-year suspension. But generally, the bottom line here will be a minimum of 6 months. And the other side of the coin here is they're going to redraw up the appeals process in Gaelic Games for suspensions of any description. And these suspensions, by the way, there's going to be a new pressure and onus on the club itself. And that's through the chairperson or other club officials to make sure that the suspended individual is also not interacting with the club on non-match days, which obviously the GAA doesn't have the reach to ensure that that's the case, so they need the clubs to buy into that. Will that work out that way? I don't know. But the other interesting development here is when it comes to appeals, we've had a desperate situation in the GAA in recent years, many years now. A player gets suspended for violence on a pitch or being part of a melee, and on the multiple different technicalities, they get off and they're in the next game. And sometimes you look at a red card on a pitch with 2 minutes to go and everyone just acknowledges, well, this means nothing, you know. What they're going to do is they're threatening to double suspensions if the committee hearing the appeal feel that an argument is frivolous, vexatious, or isn't based on procedural or technical arguments. Hopefully that will clean things up in terms of the appeals process. What you need and want is clear authority from the GAA and a clear understanding that transgressions based around violence, specifically and particularly around children's sporting games, just cannot and will not be tolerated. It's zero tolerance. It's been spoken about for a long time. So this is the first administrative step along the way to actually enacting that. And you just have to hope that they will be effective steps.
Yeah, it relies on buy-in. I'm just reading a quote here from Sligo manager Tony McEntee, and he described a disciplinary system being abused by managers and by county boards trying to get the suspensions of players overturned. And again, it's back to what you were saying about frivolous appeals. You've got a balance because people are also entitled to due process. Yeah. How do you strike the right balance?
It's a complicated question, but it's clearly one that they haven't been on. They haven't found an equilibrium yet, so it needs to be addressed one way or the other. But like you say, you can't then eliminate due process and say that the referee's word is sacrosanct on the day, even if there's been a clear and present error. I think the line about eliminating frivolous or vexatious appeals at least gives them some language to work with, at least gives them a context with which to identify certain cases as being like that. And there have been many, as you quoted the Sligo manager there. You know, it's like I go back to the level of emotional buy-in and investment of the community in the club and the community in the county. That means stuff like county boards will go above and beyond to get their players off so that they can represent their club and their community. And it probably comes from the right place, but it's not leading to the right outcomes in a lot of instances. It's a wonderful sport and it just needs to be managed in a way that platforms it in a more positive way. This has been a kind of negative feature for a period of time. Hopefully these measures will be effective, but I suspect it may be a bit of a movable feast and they might have to adjust policies as time goes on.
Well, look, I think you've touched on some of the different arguments that will all go into the melting pot at Congress in February. David, thank you very much.
Thanks, Will.
David Hollywood is our sports editor. He's back at 1 o'clock. You know when somebody apologises to you, but you don't feel they're really sorry? That's nearly worse than the original incident itself in many cases, an insincere apology. Well, I want you to meet Tanya from Port Arlington, who was recently travelling through Dublin Airport with her mum and her sister-in-law. Tanya, good morning.
Hiya, Will. How are you?
I'm great. Where were you going, by the way? Anywhere nice?
We came back from Lanzarote.
Ah, lovely. Good weather?
was lovely, 22.
Brilliant. So you were in fine fettle, all in good spirits, and unfortunately this experience spoiled your day a bit. Tell us what happened.
It did. We landed in Dublin Airport. I went on down the stairs with my mother to the bus to get to the terminal, and my mother-in-law and sister-in-law, who has special needs, had to wait on board to be assisted down. And while I was on the bus, I was standing at the doors looking out, and I heard who turned out to be the bus driver turn to the woman and say, "Oh, I wish these all would hurry up, they're very slow." And he was referring to anyone that was being assisted off.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my mother-in-law and sister-in-law were coming down with the help of the air hostess and that, he turned and he said to the woman, "We better get out of the way. I wouldn't want to be in her way and break her fall if she does come down." And he
charming.
To the side. Yeah. So my mother-in-law got on and I explained when my sister-in-law was a bit away that she couldn't hear, so we wouldn't upset her.
Hmm.
And we approached the air hostess and she was disgusted about it. And then another gentleman came and he gave out to the man he was on board because his wife was being assisted as well. And he said basically if he was saying anything about her that he wouldn't be happy. And he said he was sorry and he didn't. But if I didn't hear
the driver said he was sorry.
He said he was sorry, but it's only because we said it to him.
So you feel he was sorry he got caught more so than he was sorry for what he said?
Yeah.
All right, so you reflect on it and you think, no, I'm not happy with this, I'm going to take it further. What did you do?
Yeah, so I got off the bus and I asked a few people in Dublin Airport and they said you had to get a member of the DA manager. There's nobody there. I went to the Aer Lingus flight and she said you'd have to go to Terminal 1 and I couldn't get over there because we were Terminal 2. So I got home, I emailed Dublin Airport site and they sent me another web page and I rang and left a message, but nobody's getting back.
Right, so I'm looking at their website just because they have a complaint section and I assumed you would have maybe a form to fill out or something like that. They just give you a listing with different telephone numbers, customer experience at dublinairport.com is an email address. I don't really see anything dedicated to complaints.
No, I went to I did the customer experience one and then I did there's a telephone number there for nice complaints and other complaints. I rang that and left my name and my number and description of the incident.
Okay, and did they assure you they'd get back in touch or did they offer any thoughts?
No, I've heard nothing. Not a thing.
What would put this right for you, Tanya?
I don't think there should be passing remarks about people. Like, that girl has a disability. It's not, like, he's passing remarks about everyone. I don't think it's funny. What's he saying about me or anyone else that's on the next flight?
And did your sister-in-law find out eventually what had happened?
No, we didn't say anything. I didn't want to upset her because she's a big girl, so her, if she overheard that, she'd cry. I wouldn't want to upset her. But my mother-in-law was discussing that. We did approach him, but only for the fact we approached him, he would have went on doing the same thing.
And at least some of the other passengers stepped in and helped you make your case.
Yeah, one man came. He was lovely. And his wife was getting assisted. And he gave out to him. And at first he was like, pretending he didn't know what we're on about. And then he was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry." But he would have went on if no one had heard it.
Hmm. And why don't you feel the apology was sincere?
Because I just feel that I was standing there over and I overheard this going on.
Well, was it his tone? Was it his body language?
No,
was it your gut?
He was laughing like a joke, but I don't think it's very funny.
Right. No, well, I don't think too many people would see the humour in that.
No, and fair enough, you're having a joke, but do it where someone can't hear and you can't get offended by it. That's fine. But don't, when there's people around you and there were plenty of people with certain assistance, and I don't know, if he doesn't like his job, maybe he should think of a different position, because you're dealing with the general public who have all sorts wrong with them.
Would it make you consider flying through Shannon or Cork the next time?
No, but my son has autism and we're going away in January, and I'd hate to come through and he pass a mark about him. I don't know. It's just, I think they need to retrain their, how to I don't know, trained their staff or something.
I'm not sure if you can train people with, you know, basic courtesy and take that sort of judgmental attitude and consign it to the past. Tanya, I will contact the DAA, the Dublin Airport Authority. We'll get some clarity on what the complaints process is. And they obviously have your number and they know that you're angry and they should be contacting you, even if they say, right, we've investigated and we can't find any evidence or whatever. If you had some follow-up, you'd be better in a position than you are now. So thank you for the call.
Thanks a million. Thanks for listening.
Not at all. That's what we're here for. That's Tanya from Port Arlington. And if you've had a similar experience, how would you handle that situation? There are many who, if they overheard a comment like that about a family member, the bus driver wouldn't be getting off the bus in the same very good shape, to say the least. So, 083 30 10 103 on text and on WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. On the question of GAA discipline, Duncan is of the view that the Gardaí should be dealing with much of this. The cases are assault, in fact, sometimes aggravated assault, and there is no way that in-house discipline will suffice. That's just sweeping it under the carpet, he says. Will I travel through Dublin Airport and indeed many airports around Europe and the Middle East every year, says John McNamara in Riyadh. He's an Athlone man who's living in Saudi Arabia. He says, I have always found all airport staff in Dublin to be among the best in the world. Very helpful, with lots of smiles. He also says the DAA manages both Jeddah Airport and Riyadh Domestic Airport in Saudi, and they do Ireland proud. Tomorrow, Professor Michael O'Grady, who is a consultant paediatrician and a paediatric endocrinologist, shall join us to discuss RSV, which is a virus that's quite common and ordinarily wouldn't be wreaking as much havoc as it seems to be on the hospital system as it is at the moment. And in particular, under threes are vulnerable to it. So all you need to know, and indeed your questions answered, tomorrow on The Middle. Thank you to Sharon. And Sharon, absolutely tickled pink, having received her B&T card on the Midlands 103 Advent calendar. £100 to spend there. And today we have another prize. It's day six. It's Carrie's Beauty Salon on Pier Street in Athlone. Stumping up €100 to spend on their many, many products, including the patented Elite Hydra Facial MD. So, Midlands103.com for your entry. Chat to you soon. Bye-bye.